Okay. So, you guys saw the 5-minute video. I'll explain it a bit outside. So like I said, a little bit, let me repeat what I said before. I think every so often it's helpful, and I know Nachum knows this from last year, that I think some of the shiurim where we best understood the ramifications of what we were learning was when we took halacha, like we took a day to just do halacha on it, because then it forces you to bring everything together, right? A halachic shaila can have 100 different aspects. So I wanted to try to bring some of the things together and then sort of set us forward for the issues that we'll see, though I don't know how much longer we're going to do Sefer Torah stuff. Like I said, when I get back, either we'll go to Tefillin. There's two sugyas I want to still do in Sefer Torah, for sure, Lishma and Sirtut, but Rai Wasserman might do them, in which case, when I get back, either we'll do Tefillin or we'll skip straight to Tzitzis and then and decide whether we go back to Tefillin. And then if you guys are ready for Kachim, then we'll do the Kachim parts of the Masechta, which honestly for me is easier to teach because I taught it last year to Shana Bev. So that's... okay, so silk screen Sefer Torah, I thought, really brought a lot of the issues together in a nice way. So reminder from the video. So silk screen, it's a little bit different than regular printing, right? It's you have two levels, right? Sort of like a stencil on the first level. You push through the ink onto the second level, but the ink sort of hangs suspended in, not in midair, in on the second screen until the sofer squeegees it across the cloth. Right, and on the video I showed you, how many pages was it? How many did he did it
like
once?
Four paragraphs.
Like, yeah, something like that. So this was technology that was suggested. The technology was not invented by a from Jew. The application to Sefer Torah was obviously invented by a from Jew. It was suggested in order to bring down the very, very, very significant cost of Ksivas Sefer Torah. Because this obviously speeds up the process and makes it that there will be no mistakes and lowers the price by like, I don't know, tenfold, right? 15-fold, something. Like very significantly to a few thousand dollars. It's still expensive, right? Ink and cloth and stuff like that. But, you know, it's not $50,000, $70,000. Now, what was the motivation for this? So, what was the motivation for inventing this? Besides for just lowering the cost of Sefer Torah, what was the... One was lowering the cost, but why do we really want to lower the cost?
It's also better Sefer Torah.
To better Sefer Torah, good. What mitzvah so to do chazar? Good, right? So the posek who really put his name behind it is a bit of a controversial posek. He knows that. He writes that in his introduction to his tshuva sefer. Was Yitzhak Abadi, who for a long time was the official posek of Lakewood, and at some point was not the official posek of Lakewood due to several controversial shittot that he had. And he wrote this tshuva. I mean, he was really the force behind it, halachically justifying this. And the reason he said it, and I don't have to give you that inside, but you can already see it because we did the sugya, is that, if you remember, is the justification for all of us not owning our own Sefer Torah ironclad?
No.
No, right? I mean, you remember, right? We tried to justify our modern practice of why do we not have it. Right? Why do we not all write our own Sefer Torah? So, maybe you read the Rush, that nowadays you only need Svarim, which requires us first to think that that's what the Rush means, which the Beit Yosef denied. And the second thing was to Paskin, like the Rush, which wasn't obvious either, right? We had people who said that the Rush never said it, that he just said you need a Sefer Torah plus Svarim. And we had other people who said, even if the Rush said it, we don't Paskin that way, you need your own Sefer Torah, right? This wasn't obvious, right? Many, the Shulchan Aruch, who's, you know, a relatively important posek as things go, right, said that even nowadays you need to write your own Sefer Torah. Right? So the big push was, first of all, even for shuls it's expensive, and not just for shuls. There's a standing mitzvah for everyone to have a Sefer Torah. If you think that a silkscreen Sefer Torah is kosher, then everyone can mekayim the mitzvah kihidura. Right? In the simplest...
Write or own.
Well,
you have to write or own.
So that... we spend a lot of time on. You need to either write, you're definitely fulfill the obligation if you write, or commission someone to write. Whether you simply buy one is a machloket, but here, right? Either you could write it yourself because you could squeegee it. Anyone can learn to squeegee, right? Or at the very least, you can commission someone, and everyone agrees that you're yotze if you commission someone. If you buy it, it's a machlok rishonim. But here you could at least commission someone, right? You can commission someone to squeegee, right? To silkscreen the Sefer Torah. That was his motivation. The problem was, now there are a lot of issues that this faced. So one set of issues was the question of, does this count as kosev, as writing? Right? That is the biggest issue, and that's complicated. J. David Bleich, in his review of all the issues in silkscreen Sefer Torah, thought that the 90% of the issues that were raised against Rav Abadi can be easily solved. He thought the one that could least be solved was this question, was that the Yerushalmi has a case essentially where someone tears a stencil and pours the ink in. And Rav Abadi claims that this is not the same as the Yerushalmi, that this is not like pouring ink into a stencil, because he claims that this is more like writing, because you actively work on each letter, right? All at once, right? You don't just pour the ink, right? Meaning it hangs there suspended, and then it only writes as you put your hand on it, which he thinks is similar enough to writing, right? Bleich thinks that of all the critiques, the most serious is this question: is that really true, or is this essentially just a fancy stencil, right? That's really going to be, right, the million-dollar question is going to be that, right? And that's much more complicated, because that you have to examine, well, what is writing on Shabbos in Gittin, right? All the things we did, if you remember, when we did Ksiv HaTamah, you have to do here, right? What counts as writing for Shabbos? What counts as writing for Gittin? What would count as writing for here? And if you're interested, when I get back, we can do that, or I can give you the articles, you can read it. But that's really a lengthy discussion. But some of the less sort of complicated issues were the three that I gave you here. Now, one of the other issues that people were really bothered about was Lishma, but that's also relatively solvable, because, again, we haven't done Lishma yet, but did you guys do the Sofrim? You've done Lishma a little bit? No. The fact that you have to write Lishma? Right, for the right? You'll get to that. So one of the halachot by Sefer Torah, and again, defining this is very complicated, and this is something we definitely will do, is that you need to have intent when you write, when you, possibly when you make the or. What? So there's a different halachot of Lishma for writing, different halachot for Ksivat Shem Hashem. So the questions that were raised here was, first of all, does this count as Lishma? If I say Lishma before I do the whole plate, does that count? Do I need a separate Lishma for Shem Hashem, which obviously you don't have here, right? Right? Like if you do this, right, if you write the first page of it, right, meaning can you have two Lishmas at the same time, right? Breshit, Bara, and then, right,
well, Elkin. Some suffering go to the
mikvah
before each
Shem Hashem. Not between each Shem Hashem. No, it's... Okay, so, yeah, but you could go to the mikvah before you do the paling. It's not like...
Oh, no, but don't a lot of suffering also skip over the Shem Hashem for Torah, since you don't have to do Chesidion anyway, and then you know, have set aside like one session where they go back and do all of them at once.
I don't know. Do they do that? Yeah.
Okay. Because then you could
that obviously
set up a silk screen to not have those words and go back and write those words.
I wonder whether you can do that. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know if you could. Yeah, I mean, it's less necessary here because you're going to do it all together.
Well, but that way, then you can have a special Lishma.
Right. I mean, that would be right. If you thought that in the end of the day it hung on that question, that's what you would do. Then they also dealt with questions of Sirtut, right? Have you guys done Sirtut yet? Read the lines, you know? Has anyone here gotten Aliyah, right? You know there are lines,
yeah.
Right? What's different, by the way, of the lines, of the way Sirtut is done in the Torah, the way that we generally do it in English when you're like in first grade and you're learning how to write?
Sirtut is from above.
Right, thank you. Right, you're writing down, right? The lines are above. You don't write, you know, it's not like the way we have like lined paper. You line it above. So the questions of Sirtut. Now here you do have Sirtut, but just, Rav Moshe Feinstein had a very strange argument on this front, which no one quite understands, where Moshe argued, right, you could have argued you don't need Sirtut here because it's going to be straight no matter what if you think Sirtut is just practical. You could have said, no, you need Sirtut and just put in Sirtut, which they do. Right? You saw on the video, they put Sirtut. Rav Moshe had this argument that you need Sirtut, but you need Sirtut to be necessary. And therefore, if, right, you're doing it here, the sirtut is meaningless because it's not necessary, and memela doesn't count as sirtut, and therefore you don't have sirtut, which is a very... No one can quite follow that. It's like in a very, it's a one paragraph tshuva, like buried in the middle of something else.
It sounds like they didn't want this to happen.
Oh, good. So tell me. So at the end of the tshuva, and this I really don't want to spend time on, but I'll tell it to you. A lot of people, there were all the local halachic issues why people didn't like silk screen Torah, and then there were the meta issues why people didn't like silk screen Sifrei Torah. One of them was, can you guess, what are the big meta political issues, you know?
It's different.
Good. One is, it's new. We don't like new things, right? That was one seriously entire category of arguments, were like variations on the Chassam Sofer's Chadash Asher Min HaTorah. This feels new. Good. The second, and this also was a bit of a problem, especially when he was writing in Lakewood, was...
Job loss.
Yes, thank you. Job loss. Was they were really worried about putting Sofer out of business. Good, Nachum. Very good. Yes. So that was... So actually, at the end of the tshuva, he spends time defending why not everything is usher just because it's new, and why, you know, how does it, he deal with the fact that some sofer might
That's
lose their
so
jobs.
Like...
That's so socialist and not capitalist, I know.
No,
okay,
it's just
whatever.
Like backwards. Like, we're not
yes.
going to let people do a mitzvah because someone might lose their job.
Yes, that's part of his argument. But it,
That's so stupid.
Okay, but I want to touch on three of the issues, okay? Because I think they... So the first issue I want to talk about is the verbalizing the Torah. So I didn't give it to you here, but I hope you remember it. Where does this halacha come from that you must verbalize the Torah? Where did we see it? What? And where did it come from? Menachot Daf Lamed? What was the context? Right?
The last Sukkim.
Right, that one of the interpretations of the last Sukkim is that that was the one where Moshe didn't verbalize. Right, because Moshe was choked up in tears. Remember, the last day of Sukkim, the Torah, Moshe's death. Right? Anyone cry on Simchas Torah?
No.
Good, Max cried. I'm telling you, when I was in Shana Aleph, Rav Meidan was the Baal Korei, and Rav Amital was Chasam Torah. And when Rav Meidan got to Pasuk Hey in the last parak of the Torah, he just started crying, right? Vayamat Shem Moshe, and he just lost it. He had to compose himself because Moshe died. You know, he was like there living it.
I lost my voice for other reasons.
At that Pasuk. Exactly at that Pasuk.
Not at that Pasuk, okay. But during Chatan Torah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it was exactly there. He started crying. So if you remember, some of the Mepharshim said, what does it mean that you... So why does it matter? So he was crying. Therefore what? So some of the Rishonim said, what was the problem? Was that he didn't verbalize the last eight psukim of the Torah, which meant that it lacked Kedusha. Remember we discussed this?
Yeah.
Right? That all of Torah is both Torah Shebichlav and Torah Shebal Peh. Right? And the last eight psukim were only written and never verbalized by Moshe because he was crying. And therefore it lacked a certain level of Kedusha. But Tosfos writes there, from here we know that when you write a Sefer Torah...
You need to.
I mean, normally you need to verbalize the psukim as you write. So one of the issues that was raised was, well, what is the nature of that halacha? Because here, Hashem can speak all those words at once, right? As the famous midrash goes that we sing, good, Shamor v'zavchor v'dibur achad, right? Which is it appears in Yerushalmi and Nedarim Gimel Bet, I think. Nedarim Gimel Bet in Yerushalmi. That all these things that God, right? Achat diber elokim, shtaim zu shamati. Right? All the things that God said. And one of them is that God said Shamar v'zachor at once. Most of you, I assume, cannot say Bresha bar elokim in the time it takes you to squeegee across, you know, well, at once, right? In half a second to say, you know,
well,
an entire column.
Really, really slowly.
But even that, what are you going to do? You're going to do the whole line? You know, whatever comes under the bays, right? Remember, you're writing, you're not going one line at a time. One line at a time, you could do it, right? If you really wanted to. But you're not doing...
Okay, just read the whole paragraph and then do it.
Wow. So you're supposed to do it as you write. What?
But it is as you write.
One line at a time.
Because that doesn't really save you much time, right? A little bit. But like, also, I don't know, like, you know, the whole chop of it is like, you got the whole...
But... If you do it as you write, but since now you're writing the whole paragraph at a time, you say the whole
okay.
paragraph.
Okay, yeah. You could say maybe that counts. But what does it really come down to? Right? Meaning, if I ask you, is this a problem? Let's assume that realistically you can't really read it, right? Definitely not in any proximity, right? So what does it come down to? Is that a problem? Right? So what's the question really?
Do you need to verbalize it?
Meaning what? Right? There's clearly a halacha you need to verbalize it. But
is it practical or not?
Good. Meaning, is it that this is merely a practical halacha? What would the practical argument be?
Since you don't know the words.
Correct. It helps you, right? It helps you make sure you get it right. Like, you've probably all done this, right? You had to make sure something was right, so you read it out loud to yourself, right? You know, I hope you do this sometimes, right? If you're like writing, let's say you're writing an apology email, right? Or you're writing your college essay. I hope once you read it out loud and said, does this sound right? Your Pesach and Red Tzar. I read all of them. I read all of them.
No, I'm saying nobody read it as they're writing it. They just wrote it.
Oh, yes. Right? All these things. It's always good to read it once because then you listen and you say, does that sound right? And if you were reading the beginning of the Torah and said, you know, like you were reading the beginning of the Torah and you're writing it. Bereshit bara et ha-Elohim. Right? Someone, I would hope, would perk up and say what I just said is heresy. Right? Right? In the beginning, someone created God. Right? If you verbalize that, you know.
That doesn't sound so...
Right? I would hope that you would... Right? That would... So, if it's just practical, meaning we want you to verbalize what you're saying to make sure that it is...
Correct.
Right?
You don't need it.
If it's just practical, then you would argue that it doesn't matter. Because...
You're not making a mistake.
Correct. You're not going to make a mistake because... When is it important to make sure that you get it right?
When you're writing.
When you make the stencil, right? When you make the silk screen, make sure it's right. But once it's right, right?
You know,
run that thing through a computer, right? Make sure it's right. And once it's right,
then
it's fine. Then you use it. You know, you do it once, and then you just, you know, keep all the pages, right? But if you think, you remember, if you think that it's more fundamental, and we saw positions like this, right? That the reason you have to verbalize the Torah is because Moshe did it, because God dictated it to Moshe. Moshe repeated it. And that was part of the sanctification process of the original Torah. And you have to relive that when you sanctify our Sefer Torah. So then you might think that...
You have to read it.
That you have to do this, right? That it won't be kosher because you're not verbalizing. Right? Now, clearly, Rav Abadi, who was machsheret, thought that it was merely practical. Others who didn't like it took the more fundamental approaches and said, this is about sanctifying it. But how are you going to figure this out? Right? Who is this a machlokas between? Right? Who argued about this point? Daniel?
Magen
Avraham and? Gra. Good. Magen Avraham and Gra are commenting on what? A seeming contradiction between what two things?
Two Shulchan Aruch.
Good. Two passages in Shulchan Aruch. And since it's been a month, let's remind ourselves who wrote all these books. Shulchan Aruch is written by
Rav Yosef Karo.
Good, Rav Yosef Karo. Magen Avraham is written by
Avraham.
Good.
From
Gombiner. The writing of the Magen Avraham was very controversial when he wrote it because the name of the book was very controversial. People were very angry. Why were they angry? If only that was what they were angry at. It's worse. He's not calling himself Avraham Avinu. What's he calling himself?
God.
He's calling himself Magen Avraham. Right? The Magen Avraham is God. Right? And then to the first bracha, you know? Right? So it was a bit controversial that he called his book God. Right? Right? Magen Avraham. Right? The protector of the shield of Abraham is God. So that was a bit controversial. Magen Avraham writes on which chelik of Shulchan Aruch.
Your Arachayim.
Good. It was right there. It wasn't a trick question. Right? He writes probably the most authoritative commentary on Arachayim. Most of the major commentaries on Arachayim use him as their starting point, like the Shulchan Aruch Harav of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe of the Baal HaTanya, the Shneir Zalman of Liadi, is almost possible like the Magen Avraham. The Mishnah Berurah very heavily relies on the Magen Avraham, who's the other main major commentary on, like classic old commentary, before the summary commentaries like Mishnah Berurah, who's the other main commentary who writes on both, who writes on pretty much everything, Aruch Chaim and Yoredeya and Ebenezer and
Gra.
No, not the Gra, he's not here. The Taz. You remember the Taz? Good, the Taz. What was his name?
David Segal.
Good, David Halevi Segal. Right? David Segal, he is a Levi because Segal stands for Skan Lakonim. Good. Skan Lakonim. Good. So Magen Avraham is dealing with this, and the Gra is written by. Well, Magen Avraham is what century? 1600, 17th century. Good. The Gra is a contemporary, right? The Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer, living in Lithuania, is a contemporary of George Washington. Right. If you're ever unsure, right, just remember that. He's a contemporary of George Washington, right? He's mid 18th century. Okay?
Cool.
Okay, if that helps you place him. And if you don't know that George Washington lived in the mid 18th century, besides for you, because you're a Canadian, then you really failed. You know, this is like, you know, when I took the American history regions, and one of the questions was, you know, is America a democracy, monarchy, tyranny, or anarchy? Right. This is like the, you know, knowing what George Washington was is like that level of simplicity.
The region hasn't changed, by the way. They still have that question on there.
It's such a ridiculous question. Yeah, taking it in 12th grade. The average in my class in Rambam on that was 97.5. Like, it was thin insanely. But one of those questions should be, what century was America founded in? And the answer is the 18th century. So the Gra is a contemporary of George Washington. So let's look at this contradiction. So who wants to take Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya and Hilchot Sefer Torah? Max. First one. Yeah. Okay, right. So the Sofer needs to. What does he need? He needs in front of him another book, meaning he needs a Sefer Torah, right? He needs to sit there with his Torah that he's writing
does
and another one.
Mean specifically a Sefer Torah?
Yeah, right?
Well, like a tikkun.
What?
Yeah.
So I don't know if they do a dafka from a Sefer Torah nowadays. Does anyone know?
So it would be the same thing, is it?
I mean, it's the same thing.
Is it practical?
Right, the same thing. Right, it might come down to the thing.
Do they call
right?
it from an actual Sefer Torah?
From a tikkun, I don't know.
I mean, I have a friend of Chase's.
I have a neighbor who's a Sofer Sama. I can ask
doing,
him. Ask him. I don't actually know.
I think he is using a tikkun.
No, then I assume you don't have to do it from a Sefer Torah. But you're right, it might have come down to that question. So he says, "She atik mimenu." We're in Hilchot Sefer Torah. Right, we're in Hilchot Sefer Torah. But he says, "She atik mimenu." What is yatik mimenu?
It's a
copy. Copy, right? In modern Hebrew, it's the same thing, right? If you ever need to copy and paste, right? That's what it is, right? Copy is hot take, right? Why? So why does he need it? Max, next line, Sha'asur. Right. Good. And you need to read, verbalize each word. Now, I will point out that that the question of writing minaktav is a similar question. Though there, the post can really do think that's practical, right? Meaning, but the exact same question could have been asked there, right? Meaning, is it that you need to write it minaktav, or just we don't want you to make a mistake? Which obviously here, no, it's not a problem. Okay. So in Hilchot Sefer Torah, does it sound like you absolutely always need to verbalize the words before you write them? Is there any hint otherwise?
No.
No. Okay. What about in Hilchot Tefillin, Daniel?
Yeah, which one?
Well, you both had trouble with, you know. Well, you both noticed the problem in Shulchan Aruch, so take your pick. Which one? Who wants to read it?
You want to do the first one?
Okay.
Go.
In a parsha, shigaros befiv. If he's not saying the parsha, like in
no, shigaros befiv is if he's not
mouth.
Fluent. It's fluent. If he's not shagur, right? Shagur befiv means it's fluent in his mouth, right? If he's not fluent in these parshiot,
so does that mean like know by heart, or he's just not saying?
Yeah, it sounds like know by heart, right? Meaning totally fluent.
Okay, tzarios shikto mitoch sab. He has to write it from by copying from another.
Good. So writing, from the written text. Does this sound like this is a practical halacha or an absolute halacha?
Practical,
right? He says it's only if you don't know it by heart, which by tefillin, most people do. By Shema, most people, right? It's Shema and Vahaya, right? A mezuzah, you know, you should be able to know it by heart.
Yeah.
Okay. Siv Lamed.
Eino Rashi Lichtov Ela Hakach Yodea
Imkain Yodea Lekrod. Now this should be obvious.
Yes,
you can't write unless you know how to read, right? This should be obvious, but Okay. It's not actually true. It's not always obvious. Right? Dafka, for the... You know the Bar-Ilan project? You know, like, that I have on my computer that I copy all these from? You know? They apparently... Someone told me that they originally... The original writers were Israelis. Like, they would take this text and they would type it into the computer. But they found that it took too long because the people who knew how to read it, what did they do? They read it. They learned, right? So it took them too long. So what they did was they trained people in like Thailand or something who knew no Hebrew just to recognize the characters but not understand the language and type, because they found it goes much faster if someone has no idea what they're reading and they just, right? So it's not actually a given that people need to be able to read, but okay, right? Fine, Daniel. So, other Daniel.
So if you're not writing it from another shouldn't write it from someone else who's dictating it.
Good.
But if you are doing this, you should go over it again and say it yourself.
Okay. So now, how do you read Lamed Aleph? There's two ways to read this. One is to say that he's saying...
One could be that, so if someone's dictating it to you, you need to go over and say it again. But if they aren't, then you don't.
Right. I mean, one way is to say, look, if you're copying it, you don't need to verbalize it. But if someone else is dictating it, that's less, you know, precise, right? So you got to repeat it, right? You know, you've all done this, right? Yeah. You've all done this, right? Someone is reading you a phone number or they're, you know, it's like, you know, you book something, you're 45 minutes on the phone with customer service, and then they want to give you the, your confirmation number or whatever, and they give you this long thing, and then you read it back to them, or they read it back to you, right? 2GQ59, can I read that back to you? 2G, I don't even know what I just said, right? 2G59Q, right? You read it back, right? Because when someone's saying it to you, you're like, right, you repeat it back as you're writing it to make sure you got it. Right down pat. So one way of reading this is, you don't really need to verbalize it. If you need to verbalize it to make sure you get it right, so fine. So then you have to do it because you have to be precise.
But if
you have it in front of you, you're copying, so don't bother.
If you don't know it by heart, then you repeating it after someone dictates to you is not going to help. Because you won't know.
Correct, unless you like sit there with the Sefer Torah, right? Bereishit, Beis, Reish, Aleph, Shin, Yud, Tav, Bara, Beis, Reish, Aleph.
Say it back to make sure you got it right, like you might have misheard them or something like that.
Right, like he says, Bereishit, Bereishit, Bara, right? You know, back and forth, right? You do this with little kids, right? Like, that's how they do it, right? They do, in Israel, it's much more popular. They do it, they call it Shinun, right? Where the Rav or teacher, whoever it is, sits there. Bereishit, and the kids go Bereishit, para, you've never seen this? Shinun? So they do this, right? And it works. Like there's, you know, like we've mentioned this before, right? When I was in second grade, I learned Parsha Lech Lecha, right? My 6-year-old is finishing Lech Lecha, like next week. Right, and he's already done Bereishit and rolling with Noach, and he made a siyum on Shviit. Like it's a different world, right? They like, you know, they get them at this when they're 5, and like once you get the hang of it, you know, it works. Okay, the other way to read it is narrow. You always need to do it, but like, you know, I don't know. It's a hard read. It sounds like you don't really need to verbalize, right? So, but you could have said no.
If someone else, you could think that like since someone else is saying it out loud, you
correct?
Don't need to say
right, you could have gone the other direction and said no. If someone else is verbalizing, I might have thought that counts, right? Because it's being verbalized, but I need to verbalize it also, right? You could have said something like that. The Magen Avraham takes it the first way and says it sounds like from Shulchan Aruch that you don't really need to verbalize, right? Take it, copy, Magen Avraham.
So mashma kishekotev mitel chaktav in tzarech likra koteva. So it seems that when you're writing from another text, you don't have to read every word. Vitzarech in de kibir dea siman reshayin dalet siyif bet. Mashma daf alpichin tzarech likra. It seems from the in your adeah by complex Sefer Torah that you do have to read anyway, even if you're writing from another text. The Efshar da tenla kol betilin, but you might think that you can.
No, the Efshar, it could be that the solution to this contradiction is the Dato. Who's Dato?
The one writing.
No, Dato is the position of Shulchan Aruch. Right, Dato. It could be right. He's bringing a contradiction to Shulchan Aruch. So maybe Rabbi Yosef Karo's opinion is.
It's that you can be make all by tefillin.
Why?
Because
next three words. Me'acher.
Me'acher. Migras
Garcinan. Migras Garcinan. Because you know it, right? Yeah. You read it all the time. So the Magen Avraham's solution is that. Why does it sound like by Sefer Torah you must verbalize and by Tefillin you don't have to? What's his solution? Well, first let's get his solution. What's his solution, Dan?
That you have to verbalize by Torah but not by Tefillin.
Because? Let's push it. Right? Because?
Because Tefillin Mezuzah, you know the...
Good. And what does that tell you? How does he understand the halacha? That it's merely pragmatic. Right, meaning, what is he saying? He's saying, really, you never need to verbalize it. Elamai, you just need to make sure it's precise. But by tefillin, you know the psukim by heart, and by Sefer Torah,
you don't.
Most people don't know Kol HaTorah Kula by heart. Now, Rav Abadi picks up on this Magen Avraham and says, according to Magen Avraham, he seems to think this entire halacha of verbalizing is merely practical. I have a better solution for you. Right, the Magen Avraham solution is that by tefillin, maybe mezuzah, you know it really well. I got a better solution. What is that? Silkscreen Sifrei Torah. Right, take a squeegee. Right, and just push it across the screen. Right, because then if it's just practical to make sure you get it right, so make sure that the silkscreen is made right. But you're going to get it perfect. Daniel, what's the problem? You raise your hand. What's the problem? Right, this is the Magen Avraham solution. What's the alternative?
It's not practical.
It's not for practical reasons.
Correct. It could be that no. Right, this is a fundamental halacha. Now, either you could say that Shulchan Aruch meant it that way, or you could say that we just don't paskin that way, whatever it is. But who takes the position that this is a fundamental halacha?
Gra.
The Gra. Right, the Gra says no. Right? Vilesa, dila olam sarach lekrod befiv. You must always verbalize it. Now, if you remember, we argued, right, when we did the last eight psukim from the Torah, again, why might you need this, right? Why, we said at the beginning, why might you need to verbalize to mimic, right? Mimic the process of God giving it to Moshe. Maybe this is part of the sanctification process. Now, if you remember, right, Soloveitchik argued that this is the position of who? The Rambam. Right, he made this argument specifically, so we won't have to look at it inside. But the Rambam has a unique position by the last eight psukim of the Torah. How does he understand the phrase in the Gemara that Yachid Karei Otam? Do you remember? Or did you get to it?
That you can read it not with a minion.
Good, right? The Rambam says you can read the last eight psukim without a minion. Why? So remember, we argued based on the Rav that why? Why are you allowed to read the last eight psukim of the Torah? Without a minion, rather.
No.
Because the original one wasn't done publicly, right? And the entire process of reading, writing, everything that we do with Sefer Torah is an attempt to mimic the process of the giving of the Torah. And therefore, if the first 5,880 psukim were given, God dictated to Moshe. Moshe verbalized it and then said it to the public, etc., etc. So then, you need a minion. Right? For it as well, because that was part of the giving. It was given communally. But if this was given privately, then the Rav argued, that's why the Rambam thinks that you can read it without a minion. Now the Rav argues the same might be dependent on this, which is why do you need to verbalize the psukim before you write them? Maybe not practically like the Magen Avraham, but because
that's
how God gave it to Moshe. And Moshe repeated it, and Moshe verbalized it as he wrote it. That's part of the sanctification of the original Torah. And all future Torahs are sanctified by mimicking the process of God, Moshe, Torah. The Rav wanted to try to prove this from this bit of a complicated passage here in the Yerushalmi, so I'll read it. Where the Yerushalmi... because it's not obvious that the way the Torah was originally given... has implications for the way we experience the writing and reading of the Torah now, right? It could be that that was, like, unique, and now we learn Torah, but we're not reliving the process, we're just learning the Torah. Where do we get this notion? So he proves it from the following Yerushalmi. Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, al l'kinishta. So he, what does al l'kinishta mean? He went into where? The Beit Knesset. Chama chad bar nash, he saw what's chad bar nash. So this is something you have to know about the Yerushalmi. What is one of the big differences between the Aramaic and the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi is that often you're missing alephs. So often you'll be able to understand what's going on if you just add an aleph at the beginning of the word. So bar nash is in, like, in regular Hebrew, or even the Bavli would be anash. That would be aleph nun shin, right? Anashim. Bar anash is a person, right? But bar nash in Yerushalmi, right, you often, you're just missing that aleph. So he saw a person, Ka'im, who was standing, mitkargem samech lamuda. So, originally, the Sefer Torah was written how? Type, not written, read. When you would go to shul, what would happen in shul? There would be the Kore, and then there would be who?
Mitargem.
Right, mitargem into what?
Into Aramaic.
Which Aramaic? In Bavel, which Aramaic?
That one.
Which one? Which Targum? What do they read?
Unklos,
thank you. Right? In Eretz Yisrael, laning was much longer. Because the Targum of Eretz Yisrael are much, much longer. Unklos is almost entirely a translation with a few comments here and there. Right? In Breishit, Dafke has a lot of comments, relatively speaking. Right? The most famous in Breishit being, how does Unklos translate V'yi Adam Nefesh Chaya? Right, what does it mean that man became a living being?
Ruach
memalala, a speaking being. Right? The Yerushalmi Targumim, the Eretz Yisrael Targumim, are very, very long. They introduce a million midrashim into the Targum itself. We actually have three. We have three Targumim Eretz Yisrael, if you want to look at them. Right? The purest that we have, like the only complete one we have, is called Neofiti, or Ketav Yad Romi. The more popular one is the one that's misattributed to Yonatan ben Uziel on the side of many Mikra Gedolah. That's not Yonatan ben Uziel. It's some Targum Eretz Yisrael. It probably originally said Targum Yud at the top, which someone wrote out as Targum Yonatan. It's really Targum Yerushalmi. And it's a very late Targum. It has medieval material in it. We know that. How do we know that? How do we know it's medieval? Because when Esav marries the daughters of Ishmael, the names are Fatima and something, or the daughter and wife of Muhammad. So we know that this is written post-Islam, where someone is making a claim about, right, the origins of Islam. Right, obviously, this is much later. And then there's the fragment one that you see sometimes there. But anyways, he saw the person who was saying the Targum, what's Samuch La'amuda?
Next to the...
Leaning. Samuch La'amuda. He was leaning on the... Right, he was leaning on the pillar. Meaning, he was not halachically standing. Right? He was leaning, which is not standing. And he said, Amar Leh, he said to him, Asar Lecha, when you are mitargem, you are not allowed to lean. Why? Kishem shenitna be'ema uvira. Just like the Torah was given in fear and trepidation. Kach anu trichin linhogba be'ema uvira. We must treat it with the same trepidation. So the Rav said, what do you see in this Yerushalmi? And by the way, it's an interesting question why it is that we don't have to stand during learning. I remember I wrote a short article on this a very long time ago. Right, the Gemara says that people used to stand during whenever they learned because of this. Right, and eventually people became weak, so they didn't. But fundamentally, it's arguing that the experience of the giving of the Torah affects the way we continue to learn. Right, therefore, if it was given standing, then you must, when you're mitargim it, be standing. Right, stand at attention. Reb Chagai Amar Reb Shmuel Bar Reb Yitzchak Al Le Kinishta. Right, so now Reb Shmuel Bar Yitzchak also went in. Reb Chagai quotes Reb Shmuel Yitzchak went into shul. Chamachuna kam mitargim velo meikem bar nash tachtoi. He saw that they didn't replace the mitargim, so there was only one person there. You know how we always have two people? You know, you always have to have two people reading the Torah?
Yeah.
We have the Kore and the Ola, and if the Kore is the Ola, then the previous Ola just stays there to make sure you have two people. That's from here, right? He says, you can't not have two people up there. Why? Amar lei, asur lecha. Kishem shenitna lidei sir sur. The Torah was given by an intermediate, which means that there was always God, Moshe, and the people he was giving it to. So you can't have one person by himself. There must always be two people there. Right? So there must be a reader and someone else. But what do you see in this Yerushalmi? It could be anyone, right? Now we'll have anybody stand there. Right? We'll move over. You'll see.
Now we usually have like Bokhor, the Gabbai.
Yeah, the Rishon Gabbai. Shani, right? This is all part of this halacha where you have multiple. But what do you see from the Yerushalmi? This is what the Rav's argument is. What do you see from the Yerushalmi? That the experience of the giving of the Torah affects the way we continue to learn Torah.
It's not practical.
Right? And he argues that is what the Gra is getting at. Right? He uses this to justify the Gra. And he says, where does the Gra get the notion that you must verbalize the Torah? This isn't just practical. You must always verbalize from this, right? This sort of kav chashiva, right? This way of thinking in Chazal, which is that we must, when we're reading and writing Torah, re-experience the original process. And therefore, coming back to silkscreen Sifrei Torah, if you think that verbalizing the Torah is merely practical to make sure you don't make a mistake, so are you allowed to use a silkscreen Sifrei Torah?
Yes.
But if you take the way the Rav is presenting the Gra-like approach, that the verbalizing is the way that you right, that you mimic Nesinas HaTorah. It's integral to imbuing the Kedusha into the Torah. So then would you be allowed to use it?
No.
Right? Again, I'm not going to poskin here which way, but I'm saying, what is this issue hang on? It's this question. Is this fundamental? Right? Is it essential to the very process, or is it merely practical to make sure you don't make mistakes? Nafkamina, what if I can make sure I make no mistakes without verbalizing it? If I think it's practical, no problem. Which is Ravadi's argument. If I think it's fundamental, it's a part of the process. So then,
if Ravadi posking that it's okay, then does that mean if he wrote one like this?
So they did produce a few.
Like what?
There wasn't a market for them because many poskim came against it.
Like, can they throw them out? Can they use them in their shul? If he posking it's okay, like how does that work?
So that was one of the big questions, right? And again, I can send you the article. I think it's a fascinating topic. I can send you the article. You can read it. I can give you the original tshuva. There's two English articles that were written. One by a student of Rav Abadi who just summarized Rav Abadi, and one by Rav Bleich, which is also online for free because they put all of contemporary halachic problems now in Svaria, where he goes through all the critiques against Rav Abadi and says, I think this is good. I think this critique is valid. I think this critique is not valid. And goes through every single issue. And then I can send you the original Tshuva if you want in Or Yitzhak. It's Tshuva Nun Gimel, I think, in Or Yitzhak, which is also, it's on Hebrew books. They're online. I can send it to you if you're interested in looking at it. Okay. Another issue that was raised was the Kisidron question. So good. Remind me, guys, from before. What is Kisidron?
Writing in order.
Good. Writing in order. What does it not apply to? Which of Sefer Torah? And then we saw there's a machlokas. Does it apply to Tefillin and Mezuzah? Only Tefillin or only Mezuzah? Right? We saw all three variations on that. That the Torah must be written in order. Hence, by Tefillin and Mezuzah. Now remember, there were a million machlokas, right? But let's talk it out. So first of all, there was a machlokas. Does Kisidron mean that it needs to be written in order, or that it good? If it's about appearing in order. So then, is there any problem?
It's just the end product.
No, the end product has to be written in order. But we saw that we are machmir like Shulchan Aruch, and Shulchan Aruch thinks that Kisidron means not just it needs to be the result in order, but it needs to be written in order. Good. So this question was raised, the question of how does Kisidron affect it when printing was introduced. And that's the Magen Avraham I gave you by printing. So, a silk screen Sefer Torah. Is it written Kisidron?
No.
Absolutely not. Right? Absolutely not. So, Rav Abadi says very simple. If you assume like the Ran, right, not like the Sefer HaTrumah that Shulchan Aruch Paskin is like, that Kisidron just means the end product has to be in order, then you could have silkscreen, tefillin, and mezuzahs as well. But we don't Paskin that way. We Paskin that tefillin and mezuzah must be written in order. So Rav Abadi says, easy solution. Tefillin and mezuzah, can you use silkscreen Sefer Torah?
No.
No. Because it's not written in order, right? The bays of Bereishit, whatever is underneath it, right, you know, is written before the resh, right? And the aleph, and the shin, and the yod, and the tav, right? Because you're writing this way. Or
you could shift, you could roll, you could...
So you could do it line by line.
You could do top to bottom instead of... Yeah, you could do it line by line.
Right, you could do it line by... Right, if you did it line by line, you could do it, right? It wouldn't save you as much time.
You have the tops of all the letters.
Right, so that would be... Right, then you'd have to get into, does that count as cosine?
But that's probably a practical thing as well. Like you could, if there's a mistake, then this is a... It's not that expensive to throw it away.
Good. So Rabbi, that's what Rabbi said. Rabbi said, okay, fine. So Tefillin and Mezuzah is a big deal. So Tefillin and Mezuzah you can't write with silkscreen. But why do you need to? How long does it take to write a Mezuzah? Like an hour? Like,
that's probably the reason the Halakha is so strict with
those. That's what the Rabbi says. Yes. The Rabbi says exactly what you said, which is that by Sefer Torah, if you had Kesidron, every Sefer Torah would be apostle. By Tefillin and Mezuzah, a big deal. So you start again. Right? You get a new one. That's exactly what the Rabbi says in Kesidron. So, halacha, Rabbi said, it's very simple. I think that silk screen, tefillin and mezuzahs are puzzle. Again, you could have been machshir them if you thought, like the Ran, that kesidron just means they need to be in order by the end, not, right, but resulting, not...
Holds like that.
But we don't puzzle them with halacha, we puzzle them, and therefore he says, that's obvious. So now he says, okay, but is this kesidron even by Sefer Torah? No, that's not what I was going to say. Right. So he says, and his proof, by the way, that this is true is the Magen Avraham. Because the Magen Avraham said by printing, he says, Mashmi Dorda Matvis Vidyo Kasher, does that make Greek Siva? Right? The Magen Avraham quotes positions that printing is writing. El Shalom Rat Salom Rulamaisa, right? He says that many poskim thought that fundamentally you were allowed to print Sefer Torah, but they weren't comfortable with it. Lamaisa. Viliner did film it was possible mishum diya shalat sam same upam shenit bazo tzasheni kodem l'rishon v'avilei kishol kitzidra. And he says, my proof that there's a difference in this regard between Sora and Tefillin Mezuzah is that the Magen Avraham said this already by printing. That even if you think that printing is kosher, which was a machlokes, right? Just so you know that. This was a machlokes, right? Whether you could have just printed out. Like the beginning of print, there was a machlokes, whether you're allowed to print Sefer Torah. And then Magen Avraham, it said...
onto cloth.
Onto cloth, obviously. Yeah, but, you know, print it. Right? Forget silkscreen.
Right? How is printing any different than... And
so so Rav Abadi's argument is that if you... Okay, I should make this clear. Rav Abadi said, if you hold like the poskim 500 years ago that printing is kosher, then obviously silkscreen is kosher. His argument was even the poskim who said that silkscreen isn't good would think this is good because, right, by a printing, even the old school printing, you had the plates, but it just sort of... Right? There wasn't like a... Right,
there wasn't a physical action.
There wasn't a human being going and putting the ink on the page. Right, his argument is that even if you hold that printing is bad, silkscreen is different, and this is where people aren't sure that he's right. But you should know that there were poskim who said that printing was kosher. Right, that a printed Sefer Torah straight up was kosher. Right, like 500 years ago, this was. But at the time, the Magen Avraham had said that even if it's kosher, it's only kosher for Sefer Torah, not Tefillin and Mezuzah, because you need Kesidron. And therefore, Rabbi says, I give in, right? Obviously, Kesidron, if that's a Weepaskin, so then you can't have, just like by printing, the Magen Avraham said you can't have Tefillin and Mezuzah, so you can't do it by Sefer Torah, or you can't do it by silkscreen either. Now, again, all the shilas I'm doing, silkscreen just makes the question sharper, but a lot of these shilas were asked 500 or 450 years ago, whatever it was, by printing, where you had the same machlokes. The machlokes, achronim, it was discussed in the Taz, and then you had in the Marzdias, and the Knesset Cheskel. They have a whole machlokes about this. But they asked the exact same questions by printing. Is printing siva? Does printing count as lishma? Does it count? What about sirta? All the same questions by silkscreen were asked by printing. This is just a little bit different because there is a more active human component which theoretically solves certain issues, right? This is the more modern iteration of that. But again, obviously, to fully understand this, you have to go back to those machlokot about printed Sefer Torah. Okay. But that's sort of Abadi's argument. I think he's right. That even if you're going to entertain allowing silkscreen Sefer Torah, it's only going to be Sefer Torah because since we paskin like the Sefer HaTrumah against the Ran, the Kesidron is about the process of writing rather than the result, there's no way in a time practical way, right? Meaning you're not doing it line by line, right? You know, you want it to write, all the reasons. But again, it's not such a big deal because Tefillin and Mezuzah are not the ones that are $1 million, right? It's not, these are the ones that are like, You know, I'm saying, like, when I bought the mezuzah for my house, it was like, I don't know, 30 shekel of cloth. Like, you're not talking, you know, you're not talking 30, 40 shekel of cloth. You're not talking, like, you know, it was very cheap. I bought it straight from the Sofer. Yeah, I bought it straight from the Sofer. I didn't buy it from the, what? Yeah, I bought it from a Sofer in where did he live? In Elad. Anyways, okay, one more question that was raised. So, just to bring you, give you one of the questions that was raised about, right? As I said, the majority of the questions that were raised about printing on silkscreen was, does this count as writing? So one of the questions that was asked. Now, one of those is this writing or is it chaktochot? Right? Remember chaktochot, right? Carving out, yeah. Where I do things around the letter and not to the letter, right? But one of the questions was, there's another unique thing here, which is that I write everything at once. Is that called derech ksiva? Right? I'm writing it basically in one shot. Tuch kedei dibur, I write a whole page.
It doesn't sound like chaktochot.
What?
It doesn't sound like chaktochot.
Right, so this was by printing also. The people would say, is that chaktocha? Or is it, is it, yeah, is it carving? Is it carving rather than writing?
You're not scratching anything.
Correct, but the question is, halachically, what is it more like? Is it more like printing? Is it more like writing or carving? Right. This was,
it sounds more like writing.
Good, this was a this is an old machlokes. Like I said, this is 500 years old. 400 something years old. Right. This was, you know, right. J.J. Schachter has this very fun shiur on this question, where he uses it to look at the types of arguments that are raised. Because you had this machlokas achronim, where one of the achronim, I kid you not, I think it was actually, this is the argument of the Taz. The Taz says it must be that printing is engraving and not writing, because if it were writing, then Moshe Rabbeinu and Shlomo HaMelech were so smart, they would have invented it, because they would have made Ksivas Sefer Torah earlier, and they were the smartest people ever. So if they didn't bother inventing it, it must be there was no halachic significance to it. And then you had like the Maris Chiyas, what are you talking about, right? Being this, right, the fact that Moshe and Shlomo were great people doesn't mean that God didn't want the world to progress in order such that less smart people can accomplish things later that earlier people couldn't have, right? And this is one of these very wild machlokot where, like, the machlokot isn't like a localized halachic question. It's like, what do we believe the world should look like in terms of progress? And that's why Ray Schachter uses this to, like, indicate that, right, this machlokot is about printing and not printing in the Taz and the Cheskel and the Tzias. It's like a meta machlokot is about how do you view progress in the world, right? And again, all those issues still stand. But the one issue that I'll bring up, because I think it's interesting, and it's pretty simply solved also, is, well, is this a problem of derech ksiva, because you write everything at the same time, right? Even if you're willing to grant that it's writing, which is not clear, it might be engraving, it might be choktochot, it might be whatever it is, right? Is it a problem that you're writing everything at the same time? What would you say, intuitively? Daniel, what do you think? Or if you read the Gemara, then tell me what it sounds like from the Gemara. Because I think this is an ironclad proof. I don't think there's any, right? Of all the proofs, I think this is obviously correct. So you might have said, maybe. So Rav Abadi just points to this Gemara that I think proves it conclusively. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Yoma,
says it's okay to write it at once.
So the Mishnah in Yoma talks about several people who we really like and several people who we really don't like. The people we really like and are now dead, how do we refer to them in death? What do we say after we mention them? Right? Zechornam levracha, zechor tzadik levracha. The people we really don't like, what do we say about them? Right, or the original, the Mishnah is Shem Rishayim Yirkav. Right? Let their names rot. Right? Someone got very annoyed at me because a certain Rosh Yeshiva had referred to a Jew who had committed murder as Yimach Shemo. He'd referred to Baruch Goldstein. This is public knowledge. Rav Moshe Lichtenstein had referred publicly to Baruch Goldstein, who killed, whatever it was, about 30 Palestinians praying.
29.
I think it's 29, right? 29. Had killed them while they were davening. And in talking about him, and this because it was very heated in the previous election because of you know, supporters of Baruch Goldstein who were running for politics had mentioned him and said Yimach Shemo v'zechron. Someone got very angry and he said, how can you say Yimach Shemo about a Jew? And I said, that's just against Chazal. Because Chazal...
About, he was a Jew. And the Gemara says about...
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? The example in the Gemara of the people you say Shem Risham Yerkav about, right? The names of Risham Shadra, which is Yimach Shemam, right, is... are Jews. They're all Jews. I mean, you can argue, right? You want to argue everything else. Don't tell me the reason you can't say it is because he's a Jew. It's not true. The Gemara, the Mishnah is very clear that... Right, the principle that Yimach Shemam is based on, meaning Shem Risham Yerkav, the examples in the Mishnah are Jews. Right, let's make that clear. One of those people, okay, is this guy. Right, is Ben Kamtzar. Ben Kamtzar had a very important skill, and the reason we say Shem Risham Yerkav about him is because he refused to teach the skill to other people. What was that skill? That skill was the way he wrote. So Tanur Rabbanan, Ben Kamtzar lo ratza lamed amaisa ksav. He was very stingy about his knowledge of how he wrote. How did he write? Amru alav, shaya sofrim, this is all your, this is your goal. Okay, this is your goals. When you accomplish this, you are, in my opinion, the best sofer in the world. And not just my opinion, the Gemara's, because no one has been able to replicate this. Amru alav, shaya notel, arba kul musin bein atzvotav. You have trouble enough writing with one quill. He wrote with four quills at once. Why? Before I read the next line, what did he do with them?
He wrote four lines at once.
No, he wrote Shem Hashem at once. Right? His chaf was he would write all of Shem Hashem in one go. To sanctify it, right? And the Gemara thought this was like the most beautiful way of writing Shem Hashem. V'im haita teiva shel arba otiyot, if it's any four-letter word, especially Shem Hashem, haya kotva b'vad achat. Just write it. So yud and a hey and a vav and a hey. That's it, right? He would write four letters at a time, and Shem Hashem, or any four-letter word.
You could write it all at once.
So Rav Avadi says, obviously, 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 right? The Gemara thinks that that's ksav, right? That's...
Yeah, but that's different than this silkscreen.
Well, no.
Is there his hand where he's actually...
Not correct, no, no. Like I said, doesn't solve the problems of is printing or silkscreening writing or printing or... engraving, but the claim, right, just this claim that, oh, this is weird because you're writing it all at once, Rav Avadi said, that's just obviously wrong. Right. The Gemara says that the best way of writing is writing lo zmanit. So here, you're writing, you know, the whole line, right, it's a kesidron problem, but it's not a kosev problem, right? Writing all at once, right, and he says from a halachic perspective, right, the entire page is probably written at once because in halachic time, how long is a halachic moment? Toch kedei dibur, right? The amount of time it takes to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori, right? Normally, anything in life, I have those 2 seconds to retract. It doesn't count, right? Halacha has like a 2 second window. So he said the fact that it takes you about 2 seconds to print the whole thing would mean that from a halachic perspective, this is the virtual equivalent of Ben Kamtzar, right? That I wrote the entire page, right, at once. So he said that is not a proof. Again, the question of whether this is kosev or not is a good shaila, right? But this question of writing all at once, right, that's not a good shaila because obviously it's fine, right? The Gemara says that was even ideal. I think his proof on that point is pretty solid. Now again, just to give you the idea, and the reason I did this exercise, besides the fact that I'm leaving today, so I needed something that was a bit standalone, but also I think I mentioned this before, but I think it's important to realize this, right? Rabbi Bleich argues that one of the key skills that Posig needs to have is what, as I said, is what he calls issue spotting, right? Is that when you look at silkscreen Sefer Torah, it's not just analyzing the sugyas, right? A Posig can only be a Posig if before he analyzes the sugyas, he's capable of
knowing
what the sugyas are, right? Meaning, we've touched on three. But as I said, the other shailas are, is this writing at all? When they had printed, when they the shaila came up by printing, is that writing? Is it printing? Is it engraving? Is it chaktochot? Is it chaktirichot? Is it all the different categories we have? Is this kedarko of writing? Writing all at once, is that a problem? Kesidron, right? What does kesidron mean? Tefillin, sefer Torah, lishma. Lishma for regular Torah, lishma for Shem Hashem. Can you have lishma for Shem Hashem at the same time you're having lishma for everything else, right? Is pouring ink on it, is that called writing? Is this the same or not, right? What is it that makes writing writing? The fact that I'm formulating a letter, the fact that I'm, right, moving my hand across it. The Do I have to verbalize it? Do I have to do it minaksav? Is that practical? Is it not practical? Is it fundamental? Right? There's like 100 issues that need to be asked. And before you can analyze them, you need to know what questions you're asking. Right? And that's why Rabbi Bleich argues, and I think that this is a good example, because we spent 5 weeks learning Sugyos of Sefer Torah, and these were some of them that we've touched on so far, right? Of the shilas that come up. But to fully answer this question, you needed to realize that there were 15 shilas that you had to ask, and then know where to find and analyze each of the 15 elements. Right? So what I wanted to do is just get you thinking on this. And now, again, the issues that we still have to do, which we haven't done yet, are Lishma and Sirtut. Those are at least the ones I'm going to do. Again, it's possible Eri Wasserman is going to do those. It's possible not. If we don't, those are at least the two sugyos I want to still do in Sefer Torah. While I'm gone, guys, think about whether, when I come back, you want to do Tefillin sugyos, or you want to skip straight to Tzitzis, or do Tzitzis and see if we have time for Tefillin. Whatever you want. Like, I've taught some of Tefillin before.
In terms of, like...
The mitzvah of Tzitzis, the Tchelet... What is the relationship between the mitzvah of Tchelet and the Lavan? The historical question of is this Tchelet, right? The real halachic Tchelet or not, right? Where did that come from? What exactly is the nature of the mitzvah? It's a mitzvah kiyumis, right? You only have to wear it to go before a foreign garment day and night. What does day and night mean, right? It's a mitzvah during the day. What does that mean, right? Things like that. What types of begadim? Things like all the, you know, tzitzis. The tzitzis circular fasting. Tefillin is like... right, we started touching on it, Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam, Tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Why don't we wear Tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Do we wear it on Chol HaMoed? Right, those are like some of the Tefillin sugyos. What does it mean that Tefillin is an os, and how does that affect Halacha? In Israel, you don't do that. Yeah, no. In Israel, you don't do that.
Uri went to the Kotel to say Birkas Kohanim, and he started taking out his...
No, they'll
and the guy came up to him and he's like, he took it out of his hand, he said no.
No, it's against Minhag Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, there actually is a Minhag HaMakom that virtually the entire country does not wear Tefillin. Right, there's virtually a unanimous Minhag of Eretz Yisrael not to wear Tefillin on Chol HaMoed, yes. So all those things are fascinating, right? What does it mean that Tefillin is an os?
The one thing
I think I really do want to do, because I think it's also one of these fascinating Lumdish / modern halacha shailas is how do you determine lefty or righty for Tefillin Bisman Hazeh? Ray Willig has an excellent article on this where he gets into the question of, right, we know that righty and lefty matters, but in classic halachic literature, a righty is someone who writes with their right hand. Does that change? Is Ray Willig's question in a nutshell, is that a siman or a siba? Meaning, is it that writing is the halachic determinant? Or that really a righty is the one who does the most significant activities, which in his time was writing, with his right hand. But what if you don't write, usually you type, and the primary things you do are with your right. Let's say you write with your left hand, but you never write. You always type, and you do other things with your right hand. How do you determine righty and lefty, right? And then the Gemara's question about ambidextrous, right? Meaning, is lefty non-righty, right? Is ambidextrous a righty? Is he a non-righty, right? Is righty... meaning exclusively non-lefty, right? All those
hands, if you create with either hand.
Ambidextrous, exactly. So I definitely want to deal with that. There are some tefillin sugyos I want to do, but you guys decide. If you guys really want to skip the tzitzis, I'll skip the tzitzis. If you want to do some tefillin sugyos, we can do that. In the meantime, I think the schedule is that tomorrow...